Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Learn more at nm.org/better.
Time for our weekly Monday morning appointment with Dr. Kevin Most, Chief Medical Officer at Northwestern Medicine Central DuPage Hospital. In the United States, modified COVID booster shots, they say, are unlikely to be cleared for several more weeks because health authorities decided in late June they wanted modified vaccines to target different Omicron subvariants than those rolling out already in other countries. Doc, what's the latest on this? Are we going to get this booster shot, you think, in the next short while here?
Bob, they're certainly saying that right now. You know, they're saying in the next few weeks, which, you know, again, gives people confusion. I'm up for a booster now. Should I get it? And right now you hear this message where, like you said, it's the modified one. It's going to have the original COVID plus BA4, BA5, much superior vaccine. So we have people now saying, I'm not going to get boosted now. I'm going to wait until the opportunity to get the modified booster.
And let's see, this booster, as I understand it, is also going to prevent infection. So unlike the previous vaccines, this means that not only will it keep you out of the hospital, but you may not get infected at all. Do I have that right?
You're exactly right. And that is the big part. Because if you think about it now, people are getting the booster now, are still getting BA4 and BA5. We've been telling people that, you know, it's like, it's not going to prevent it, but it's certainly going to make the symptoms, you know, a little bit decreased, and it's going to prevent you from hospitalization and death. But now the new vaccine, where it's specific to a strain, and the analogy I like to make is, when we do flu shots, we try to guess what that strain is going to be, right? And we say, oh gosh, we're 50% right this year. Well, with this one, we know exactly what strain of BA4 and BA5 are circulating, and now we make the vaccine directly against that. Now you're going to start to see prevention of illness, which is key, especially now that schools are back in session.
And what do you say to people who have received the booster that's available now in the last month or two? Do they have to wait before getting this new booster?
Well, it'll be interesting to see what the CDC and the FDA come out with the recommendation. Because if you give vaccines too close, that's why we have specific spacing on the timing of vaccine, because we know we're going to maximize the immune response. For some vaccines, you wait a month. For other vaccines, you wait 6 months. So certainly for this one, they're going to be making the determination of trying to protect everybody as much as they can coming into the holiday season of Thanksgiving and Christmas, of when they're going to allow people to essentially get a third booster or their fifth shot. And again, this one is really, if we keep it as promising as the data is showing right now, this could pretty much be your annual shot. In other words, the original COVID plus whatever variant happens to be circulating at that time, just like we do with influenza.
Will the new booster be for anyone over 12?
That's what they're saying right now, is 12 and over. Now, that's good, you know, because it'll at least protect some of those school-age kids. But, boy, you still have that 5 to 12-year-old who is still going to potentially get this and bring it home. So certainly the studies are being done right now on those younger kids, and I would expect data to be out here in the next month.
I'm curious as to your take on the news from last week about the CDC taking a very critical look at how they handled the pandemic. Moving forward, what changes do you think they have to make?
Well, you know, I think Dr. Walensky, two things. good that she stepped forward and acknowledged, hey, that we did not handle this as well as they should have. Certainly a revamping of that is going to be extremely important, because there was so much confusion, communication coming out. You know, it's like every other day you're like, wait a second. And with that, so much confidence was lost. So Walensky, I think, is going to be more transparent. I think she is going to try to really ramp things up as far as getting information to the public that they can understand. Not that scientists understand, but that the public can understand and why. But the unfortunate thing, Bob, is we thought we learned a lot with COVID, and we certainly have already had missteps with monkeypox, you know, right on the heels of COVID.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Not enough vaccine, right?
Well, you know, we had plenty of vaccine, but unfortunately the vaccine that we had expired. We didn't reorder. By the time we found out that monkeypox was going to go global and going to be a bigger issue, we went back to the manufacturer and said, hey, remember that order we had for, you know, 20 million doses? And they said, oh, yeah, we remember it, but you didn't get it. And a lot of other countries now have jumped in front of you. So now we're getting it, but not at the rate and the volume that we should have, because we should have had this in our stockpile and we let it expire.
It's our Monday morning house call from Dr. Kevin Most of Northwestern Medicine. Doc, what do you know about this new study about the first symptom you get if you have COVID?
Yeah, but you know, it's interesting. When we hear of any illness, we certainly want to look at what symptoms came when, because as a physician, it starts to give you what we call a differential diagnosis. It allows us to eliminate something, going, oh, well, with this illness, you wouldn't have had that first. So what they did is they looked at a whole bunch of people, like 50,000 people who got coronavirus in China, and said, okay, took very deep notes on, all right, what was your first symptom? What was your second symptom? How did it follow? And what they found is not really surprising to a lot of us, and certainly the first symptom they got is fever, and then it was followed by cough and muscle pain, and then some individuals got nausea, diarrhea. So what the scientists are saying is, you know, hey, this is really going to be helpful for us. And what we're saying in the general public medical field is, yeah, it's okay, but it really doesn't do a lot for us, because influenza, which is our biggest competitor for this, even monkeypox, which is another competitor as it grows, the first symptom is fever. Mm. So, you know, we're going to try to figure it out. It's the big thing really is going to be the ability to do testing. And then you also have the confusion with people that say, my normal body temperature is X. When I'm at 99, I have a fever. You know, when we look at a fever over 101.5. So hopefully we'll get some more determination on how we're going to use this and how quickly we'll be able to test. But we still certainly know, too, the Paxlovid, as long as it's given within those first 5 days, is still going to give us good relief from knocking this virus out.
I guess there's some confusion about whether you would have the flu or COVID, right?
Correct. People who have had influenza know that you get this high fever, shaking chills kind of thing, exactly the first symptom that we get before you follow up with the other symptoms that you're going to see in influenza. Kind of the same with this, and it happens with a lot of viral infections. Just because the virus continues to multiply in your body until it hits a point where the immune system says, oh my gosh, what's going on? And then the first symptom is, let's hit a high fever to see if we can knock this out ourselves.
Wasn't the original COVID virus first felt around the chest, and then this variant now like above the neck?
Yes. Yeah. If you remember the first one that we saw, where we had numerous hospitalizations and people on ventilators and cough, and it really got into much deeper into the lungs and got into the circulatory system and got to our brain and got to our hearts, where the BA4, BA5 is more upper respiratory. It likes to stay up in the upper respiratory, causing what we've been calling, you know, this really bad kind of cold. But it's certainly not the COVID that we saw originally, where, you know, we were concerned we were going to run out of ventilators. Those right. days are gone, hopefully.
Hopefully. This new research about cognitive decline and how to slow it down indicates that stretching may help. Tell us about this study.
Yeah, Bob, this one's probably very interesting for a lot of listeners because, you know, Alzheimer's and cognitive decline are obviously something that we're all concerned about. So there's lots of studies going on what medications, how do we stop this, how do we slow it down. What this study did is they took and we said, okay, we know that if you exercise, and when I say exercise, you're getting your heart rate up to 120 beats a minute, you're exercising for 30 minutes, we know that that will slow decline. And we say, why do we think that? Well, we've proven it, and we think it because increased blood flow and the amount of brain usage that we use when we exercise continues to use our brain. Well, this group said, hey, we have a group of individuals that can't do that. They can't get their heart rate up. They have bad hips. They have bad backs. They have some reason why they can't. And what this study did is they said, okay, let's just put you through stretching and what we call balance exercises and range of motion. So they compared two groups, one that had heavy exercise, one that just did the stretching and balance and range of motion, and they found after a year there was no difference in the cognitive decline. Now, people will say, wait, there wasn't a control study that showed that if you did nothing. And you know what? Good for them. You shouldn't have a study for this to show that if you do nothing, it's going to cause decline. We should show what we're going to do and what we can do for every individual to maintain that cognitive ability.
Yeah, as I understand it, the people who were in this study performed stretches, range of motion, and balance exercises four times a week, and they were saying that the mental energy used to do that, the concentration involved in stretching and balance-related activities, may stimulate the areas of the brain. So I guess that would be why it might slow cognitive decline.
100%. People don't understand that, you know, our balance is made up of a few things. Receptors on the soles of our feet, impact of our inner ear, and our vision. So if you think of an adult, a senior, they may not have the greatest vision. You know, their feet, whether they have a neuropathy from diabetes or just from problems, their brain is working very hard to make sure that they can stay in balance and not fall. As we age, certainly we see more falls. So this is certainly has proven that the more time you do balance exercises and stretching exercises, where the body's put in a position of uncertainty, it does stress the brain, so we do see increased blood flow to the brain, and that's exactly what this study shows, that it will also decrease a cognitive decline because of that increased blood flow in the activity that you're doing.
All right, now help me with my homework. We're going to have Dr. Fauci on here, I believe, Thursday morning. Give me a good question for him.
Yeah, Bob, you know, I would say two things. One, we just talked about a little bit, right? How are we going to track the variants worldwide to make sure that our annual shot is going to have the variant that's going to protect us the most? That's probably the biggest question that we all have now is we have determination of when we're going to have flu shots. How are they going to do this for COVID, and how are we going to track it worldwide? And then from a selfish point of view, you can ask them for me, when are we going to stop masking in hospitals where you have the most highly vaccinated group of individuals? We use the most sanitary of reasons that we can to take care of patients. We've all been boosted, and we all still have to wear masks. And the reason I ask that, is I'm certainly, you know, he will have a good answer of immunocompromised patients. But our biggest concern is that we're not communicating as well with patients. Patients that can't hear well can read lips. Patients can't see facial expressions to get the confidence in their doctor. So I think that that is one thing that we have to look at and say, why are we doing, you're not doing it in grocery stores, you're not doing it in movie theaters, you're not doing it anywhere else. Why are we doing this where we know the caregivers are very protected?
Got it. I'm on it. I'll report back on Monday morning. Thank you.
You got it. Take care, Bob.
You too.